it is Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
The Trial of Alec Murdaugh Part 2. Well, we're starting to prepare for it. It's likely not going to be taking place until well into next year, but the conversations are already beginning. What is going to happen this time? What's going to make it into the courtroom? A man who knows quite a bit about that and who helped influence quite a bit of what went into Alec Murdaugh Trial Round 1 is with us, Eric Bland, defense attorney of Bland & Richter, co-host of Cup of Justice and his own podcast, Anything But Bland. Eric, welcome to the podcast. We got a lot to discuss. The first thing I have to ask you, pretty obvious one, I'm sure you've been asked it 1,000 times now. Let's see if your answer has changed at all. But when the news came down, we all knew it was likely going to be happening of Alec Murdaugh getting a retrial. When the news officially broke, and it wasn't just out there in the ether, but when it hit you and it was a fact, what was the first thing that went through your mind?
Well, I did expect that it was coming. I was more surprised at the oral arguments. So the oral arguments were in February of earlier this year. And if you're a student of the game and you know anything about appellate arguments, it was obvious based on the questions that were asked of the prosecution as opposed to the defense. The prosecution took fastballs to the chin. Mm-hmm. So we knew after the oral arguments that most likely it was going to be a 5-0 or a 4-1 vote at the best for the state. And it was clear that they had really took some serious umbrage to the decision that the former Chief Justice Gene Toll made in not granting a new trial in the January and February 2024 hearing. Mm-hmm. We did not expect that the Supreme Court would go so hard at the former Chief Justice. What was surprising, though, is how hard they went against, the trial judge. It was shocking that they really went deep into how much Judge Newman went into the financial crimes, and mm-hmm. that the court felt that they went, as they said in their opinion, too far and too deep.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, Tony, I think that by not giving the new judge guidance on how much can be let in of the financial crimes, I think if the new judge, which was selected today, goes into the financial crimes, it's going to give another opportunity for an appeal to Alex if he should be convicted in the retrial, because they didn't put any guardrails other than mm-hmm. to say, don't go too deep, don't go too far. What does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a big question. And obviously, we've now had several years to think about it, too, of how much was too much. Was it too much? Some will say it was far too much. Some will say maybe it was even too little. Some will say it's just right, the amount that was in the original trial of Alec Murdaugh. And there was a lot of things that the Supreme Court said, you know, this had zero probative value. One of the things they pointed out, as the Supreme Court pointed to in addition to the financial testimony, was the testimony of Tony Satterfield's testimony about his brother's disability as having zero probative value. You represented the Satterfield family. I mean, how do you process a court telling your clients that their pain was basically legally irrelevant?
Well, that's the motive. The state chose to introduce motive as being the financial crimes and the financial pressure. Mm-hmm. Remember, pressure breaks pipes or it makes diamonds. In this case, the state said it broke Alex's pipe. And I think it would be, it was wrong to say that Tony couldn't talk about the disability of his brother, because it just goes to show that Alex had a clear path, pretty much a clear path to take advantage of this, these younger men. And, you know, it's shocking that we have to go through this all over again. However, people need to know, you know, justice can be messy when you're chasing justice. It can be cumbersome. It can be entangled. And don't forget, John Gotti got tried five times, Tony, before they convicted him. There was four hung juries and the prosecution tried him five times. You know, we've had a number of trials in our history that have been more than one. We had Karen Reed last year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, justice often isn't pretty, but we got to get it right. Okay. As a lawyer, I am comforted by the fact that our system works for the worst of us, not just for the best of us. And it should work the same for the best as the worst. And certainly Alex is the worst. Yeah. And from our standpoint, that's why my partner and I and Mark Tinsley and Justin Bamberg worked so hard to get him convicted of the financial crimes, because he's in prison for the rest of his life for the financial crimes. He can't get out from under those. Mm-hmm. And so he's doing 27 years in the state prison, which he has to serve 23. He's 58 years old. He'll have to serve until he's 79 in a maximum security prison. Mm-hmm. Then he pled guilty on the federal level and got 40 years, Tony, to run concurrently. So 27 of those years run at the same time, but 13 more run separately. So when he gets out, if he can live to 79 with the bad food and the bad health and the danger of being in Gen Pop in a maximum security prison, he has to serve 13 more years in a federal prison. So if he can make it to 92 years old, he'll get a breath of fresh air. But from our standpoint, that's why we work so hard to get him convicted of those financial crimes. And truthfully, none of us believed that he was going to be found guilty on that first trial. We believed he was going to, it was going to be a hung jury. We never, nobody forecasted a not guilty verdict. But we thought that there was going to be one or two jurors that would feel that the state didn't meet its burden. That, you know, a circumstantial evidence case troubles a lot of people more so than a direct evidence case. And as it turns out, there was one or two jurors that had some skepticism.
And I guess, you know, that's the big question. If we go into this, or when we get into the second one, will there be that same sort of replay? Will there be one or two that are feeling the same way, minus a Becky Hill to push her influence into it? Especially
let's be clear, though. Becky's influence has been so overblown. Yes. Remember, I represented six of the seated jurors who testified, one, that they never heard her say anything, but two, that their verdict was the product of their own deliberation on the evidence, on the testimony, on the judge's instructions. And five other jurors said the same thing when they testified in front of Chief Justice Toll. It was only the juror Z that said, she vacillated back and forth. Originally, she thought he was innocent, and then she felt pressure. But then Justice Toll felt, well, you've written three contradictory affidavits. I can't really discern whether it is true that your verdict wasn't the product of your own free will. And remember, they were all polled.
Yeah,
after
that
the
is
verdict,
true.
Everyone raised their hand. And Tony, we don't want a system. We don't want a system where jurors can go out in the public and get infected after a trial by people like you and people like me that go on and we give our commentary, and then they're subject to the scrutiny of friends and family. Why did you vote him guilty? What about this and this and this? And then 6 months later, they're asked, well, do you have any reservations about your verdict? Well, of course. You know, when you're salted with a lot of stuff over the ensuing 6-7 months after your trial, you know, it's dangerous to go ask a juror then to put your head back into the jury room and say, were you influenced? So, look, Becky did wrong. There's no question about it that the moment she capitalized on it and she abused her power and her trust, but she pled guilty not to anything that had to do with influencing the jury. It was abuse of her office. It was charging money to, you know, the slush fund account and different things that she did, but not anything having to do with influencing the jury. Look, we need to have clerks of court be seen and not heard. Tell the jury when they're going to eat lunch. Tell the jury when they should show up. But don't start commenting on the substance of the trial. But it's really offensive to these jurors, and they've said this to me, that they would be influenced by Becky Hill as opposed to sitting in court for 7 weeks. Remember, they gave 7 weeks of their life, Tony, to have their trial overturned.
And 12 and a half hours of it filled with financial crimes information, which if you are presenting that as part of your case in chief, and that's part of the evidence against Alec Murdaugh, it's important to have that there.
Well, the juries now, want motive. Juries want motive.
Yes, exactly.
Tony.
Yeah.
Motive is not an element of murder. But juries want to know.
They certainly want it. They want the context. They want it to make sense in their minds, especially if they're going to send someone to death or if they're going to send them away for the rest of their lives. But 12 and a half hours of it, I don't particularly have an issue with it, but, you know, obviously the Supreme Court said a bit much in no uncertain terms. Where do you think it lands here for the next trial? Can 12 and a half hours of the financial crimes testimony be condensed down to an even more powerful 1, 2, 3 hours? Or should Creighton Waters just keep going with the plan, keep presenting the same story? The story hasn't necessarily changed from the perspective of the prosecution. Is it very important that all of it, every inch of it, reaches those jurors' ears on a round two?
No, I think that would be foolish on the part of Creighton if he would disregard the clear admonition by the Supreme Court of going too far and too deep. The question is, okay, you say you could put in that he stole $4.3 million from the Satterfield's estate and that Tony had called him 7 weeks before the murders after there was an article written in the paper by my co-host, Mandy Matney, that $500,000 of the $4.3 million that was stolen was discovered. So you can go into that. You got to go into the fact that Maggie was living at Edisto. Alex had borrowed $750,000 from Palmetto State Bank, and she was required to guarantee that. And he asked her to come back and guarantee, sign the loan documents, and she refused. That put a lot of pressure on him. And you certainly have to put into the testimony Jeannie Seckinger on the morning of the murders, confronts him about stealing $675,000 from the law firm. So if you do that in a way that it's bop, 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 real quickly, not getting into too much detail, maybe you survive the 403 prejudicial analysis. Does the probative value outweigh the prejudice, or does the prejudicial value outweigh the probative value? That's got to be a decision by the judge. And as I told you before we got on air today, we did get a judge today.
That's some big news.
Big news. We got Judge Debbie McClassen, who's been a state court judge probably for the better part of 6 or 7 years, a lot of criminal experience as a lawyer. She was a defense lawyer. She has tried a lot of cases. She has probably worked with Dick Harpootlian on the defense side, where they represented co-defendants in a lot of criminal cases. She's respected. She has a very good temperament. She's kind. You're going to get the same kindness like you got from Judge Newman. If there's a criticism, that you'll hear. It's probably that she was a defense attorney and she travels in the circles of Dick Harpootlian and Jim Griffin when she was a lawyer. However, she is the trial judge on another case where I represent a defendant who's charged with murder. And the criticism that some of the defense attorneys raise, not me, is that she goes bent over backwards now to make rulings that show that she's more favorable to the state. That's the argument. I disagree. Mm-hmm. I think she shoots it straight down the middle. So I think she's an interesting selection. I said, Tony, last month, we need a female judge. I believe we need a female judge in this particular case. And I think her selection is going to be good. She is very cautious. She knows criminal law backwards and forwards.
Why do you say we need a female judge here on the case?
Because of Becky. You know, I think Becky cast a bad light on the females. And, you know, obviously Maggie was, you know, is a decedent who was killed. I just think that it lends a different color to how the trial is going to proceed and whether these lawyers are going to get very direct with her in the way they got direct. You know, Dick had some pretty strong words with Judge Newman and on some of the rulings, especially when Judge Newman held that Jim Griffin opened the door to let in these financial crimes. Dick was pretty vocal on a lot of things. He won't do that to Judge McClassen, and she won't take it either. She's a tough lady. She's a country lawyer. She was raised in the country. She's quippy. I love her. I really do.
Is there any, obviously, there we want no inclinations of improprieties or conflicts of interest or anything that could possibly cause another rift in this to have any sort of appellate issues down the road. Obviously, Debbie here has been a judge now for quite some time, coming from the defense end of the world. Is there any world, are we going to be hearing, obviously people are free to make their opinions, but are we going to hear anything in that line in the coming weeks and months about this being, well, she's too much on the Murdaugh camp because she was a defense attorney and maybe she worked with Dick once or twice or something. And is there any legitimacy to that where we do even the aura of it in the air shouldn't be there, even if it's not truly a true conflict of interest?
Correct. It's the appearance of impropriety is the standard that us lawyers and you know about. If there is a judge and you want to make a motion recuse, it's the appearance of impropriety. Look, we have a small state. We have a relatively small bar. When you get into the criminal bar of the type of lawyers that Dick Harpootlian is and Jim Griffin is and Debbie was, you're going to travel in the same circles, Tony. Sure. You're going to be at the table with these lawyers in co-defendant drug conspiracy cases or, you know, gangbanger cases.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to happen. But that doesn't mean that she can't be fair and impartial. Mm-hmm. And I believe she is fair and impartial. Look, I have a long relationship with Judge McClassen. If I was to ever try to lever that relationship or leverage it in the current case that I have, where I represent somebody who's charged with murder, she would call me out on it. Okay. Mm-hmm. She's not going to let that happen. She is the kind of lawyer that will bring you back in chambers. She will discuss things before she makes a ruling, but she's not going to tip her hand. I think she's the perfect judge for this case.
How do you think, and obviously you can't speak for them, but how do you think the Murdaugh camp, specifically Alec Murdaugh himself, obviously being an attorney, I'm going to guess over the course of time, he's probably had some interactions with her while he was practicing. I could be wrong on that, but I'm assuming probably. How do you think he is feeling and reacting to the news of who the judge is going to be in round two?
Well, I think he's encouraged. One, he's encouraged by the Supreme Court decision,
sure,
which roundly said that he didn't get a fair trial. His Sixth Amendment jury right was impacted. He's certainly encouraged by the decision that said, look, you can't get into the financial crimes the way that you did, which curtails the motive for the state. But also, I think he is encouraged because of the relationship that he thinks exists between his lawyers and Judge McClassen. But mm-hmm. remember, Judge McClassen's going to, whether it's subconsciously or consciously, she's not going to, in public or anywhere, put herself in a position where somebody could say, hey, you're currying favor too much with the sure. defense. I think, you know, there is criticism out there, especially in self-defense cases and defense of others. And that's not what this case is. Yeah. But in self-defense cases, I've heard defense attorneys say she won't charge it. She listens to the state. And when she sentences, she can sentence big. She doesn't yeah. sentence like a liberal judge. When she sentences big.
Let's talk about some of the things that Harputlian has said recently. And obviously, mm-hmm. you know, he's representing his client. He's going to make the statement he's going to make, saying that they've uncovered additional evidence and need subpoena power to develop it. Of course, I know.
That's the civil case.
You've been inside the case for years. I mean, what could they have that's genuinely new in your scope of knowledge here?
Well, Dick said that they were going to prove who the murderer was before the first trial, and that never happened. It rang, it rang a lot like OJ, you know, yeah. who said he was going to spend the rest of his life finding out who killed Ron and Nicole, and it yeah. turned out he spent the rest of his life on a golf course. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we were a little suspect of Dick saying what Mark Garagos did, that we're going to prove who the murderer is. The defense never has to prove that. So that was not a smart thing that I think Dick should have said. However, Dick, don't forget, has used this civil system now to sue Becky Hill in the state. Mm-hmm. And it opens up discovery that he can't get in a criminal case. So he's going to use a lot of discovery in his civil case to see if he can uncover through subpoena information that's relevant to his defense that this was a murder committed by others in connection with retaliation for Paul killing Mallory in the boat case. Now, look, you know, we've waited for this evidence to come forward. You know, if two people, you know, if there were two killers, one who used a shotgun and another used a high-powered rifle, they're the dumbest executioners I've ever seen. I don't know any executioners that come onto a Southern property in the dark of night without their own weapons. And the plan's going to be, I'll break into the house and I'm going to steal the weapons of the owner and then go kill the wife and the son. No, executioners bring their own guns. But Dick is going to subpoena around the edges. Obviously, you can't subpoena and use the Freedom of Information Act against SLED to get their information. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of local law enforcement agencies and DNR and different things that maybe they would have a file that would show that there were threats made to Paul or the Murdaughs after Mallory's death. So I think it's advantage defense. And I say that even before the civil case. Because yeah. the defense now knows how to retry the case. They're going to not make the same mistakes that they made before. And now they're going to have discovery from Becky's civil case that they could use. And, you know, the presentations could be different. One of the things is Alex probably won't testify in this second trial. Yeah. They'll go on the fact that the state hasn't proved guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. But here's the question. Can Alex's testimony be used against him if he takes the fifth? That's an interesting thing because don't forget he was already subject to cross-examination and mm-hmm. he testified under oath. So if he takes the fifth, our law says that you possibly can use his testimony against him. Remember, he said, I lied. I lied mm-hmm. about the kennel video and said yeah. it in front of the jury. So There's a lot of interesting pretrial rulings that are going to have to take place.
And that's another interesting thing about this case is that was a bombshell in the original trial because, oh my gosh, he's on the stand and last minute he's going up. And oh my God, he's telling you he lied about all this stuff. Oh
he
my
lied to his
goodness.
Son, Tony.
I know, but the shock of that is gone.
What father lies to their only living child?
Oh, I know.
Child.
Well, I think we know the answer.
That I was actually there a minute and a half before they were killed when I told you for 2 years I was sleeping on the couch.
Yeah. So, but will that land as strong as it did a second time with a new jury? Because the shock of it's gone. We know, obviously it's a new jury. Hopefully they don't know too much about the case, but the shock and awe is gone.
Do you want a juror that doesn't know anything about Alex Murdaugh? That's not a jury.
I think it's going to be an
impossibility
at this point.
It's impossible. It's impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. But just to have
somebody to just say, general knowledge. We don't want somebody that was a student of the case, but we don't want a David Souter like George Bush appointed to the Supreme Court that nobody knew anything about him in the 80s when he was appointed as Supreme Court justice. He was a district court judge that didn't write any major opinions. And then when he got to the Supreme Court, nobody knew how he was going to rule. I mean, if I had a juror who said to me, a potential juror, Mr. Bland, I've never heard of the Alex Murdaugh case. I'd strike that juror, Tony. I don't want that juror because there's something wrong with that juror.
Yeah, they're a little too under the rock to be able to give an objective opinion. But I do wonder about that. I do wonder about that being an element of the case that is gone. The surprise
is shocking.
Gone.
Is
there
nothing
any is. Shock left? I mean, is there anything that Poot's going to dig up here with the civil case? And I guess the question is this. Are they going to, how deep are they going to go in terms of a third-party culprit? Are we going to see them literally getting to an area where they're naming names or strongly insinuating people that are identifiable? Yeah. Or is it going to just be down to, well, this group over here has some animosity, so it could be any one of them?
It'll be general. Dick likes to lay smoke fires all in the courtroom and light a fire here and light a fire there. And he's a professional 44 caliber smoke screener. So he'll build a fire in this corner or that corner. Don't forget, Tony, the state thought that Cousin Eddie was involved in the murder somehow. Mm-hmm. And Cousin Eddie is still charged for the roadside shooting. The roadside shooting that took place 3 months after the murders.
Yeah.
That has never been resolved. So for a while, the state wasn't even sure that it was just Alex. They had looked at Cousin Eddie. So, you know, I think what you're going to see from Dick is that he's going to focus very, very hard on the lack of real clear evidence. I don't think you're going to see him put up the guy that, you know, the coroner who, you know, felt the armpit and the temperature of the armpit and could name the time of death. I don't think you're going to see the guy that said that the shooter was a 4 foot, 5 foot man like the expert for all did. The guy had, you know, was an expert on ballistics and boating and gun trajectory, all that. I think they're going to be leaner.
Yeah.
I think the prosecution's going to be leaner. And, you know, if it wasn't Alex, who was it? You know, why isn't, you know, somebody would have sold that information to the FBI over the last 3 years, Tony. Come on. If it was somebody else, somebody would have brokered that information. There's confidential informants everywhere.
You would think. You would certainly think if there was more than one person involved. I guess how are they going to get it sold to the jury without the reasonable doubt part? Because that, even to me to this day, I'm still like, there could be a possibility here that there's other folks involved. I still think Alec was involved, regardless. I think But how do you avoid that reasonable part? Fact. Because there's a lot of places where it seems like Creighton could go or that Poot could go.
Let me give you those facts. In 101 jailhouse phone calls, Alex never once screamed, "I'm innocent. What are people doing to try to find out the real killer? Why am I still in jail?" He talked about football. He talked about deer hunting. He never once screamed, "I'm innocent. What's being done?" Mm-hmm. At 10 o'clock at night, when he comes home and supposedly finds Maggie and Paul dead, and he calls the police, the police come. He doesn't have one stitch of blood or dirt on him. Tony, I can tell you, if I came home and my wife Renee and my son Davis were on the ground dead, I would have squeezed them and screamed to the heavens, and I would have had their blood and their mud and their dirt all over my body. I wouldn't be clean, okay? I wouldn't have waited 40 minutes to call my only surviving son, Buster, and tell him that his mother and brother were killed and ask him to come home. Remember, Tony, if there are real killers out there and it wasn't Alex, why would he ever ask Buster to come home? Wouldn't you tell Buster, wherever you are, run to the police? There's killers out there that are trying to kill our family.
Sure. Well, and the fact, too, there's no explanation from Alec, who totally contradicts himself of saying he went down there, he tried to turn his son over, he was active. I mean, and he has this white shirt on. That's not, even if you didn't kill them, what you just described them. Doing would put blood on you.
So, correct.
There's no explanation for that part.
He changed his clothes three times.
Yeah.
After 5 o'clock when he came home from work.
Yeah.
We know that he was wearing khakis and a blue shirt at the Sunflower when he was with Paul in the golf cart on the Snapchat video. We know that he had a different outfit on when he was at the kennels and then another outfit and when he went to his mother's and then came home. And then God knows what happened at the mother's house. You know, there's a lot of people that believe that the gun is buried in the back lawn with his father.
That's an interesting thought. How are they going to, how is the prosecution going to fight off some of the other possible third party areas of this that may be brought in? Blanca has said, even on our show, I'm not sure if she said it in the trial, she had talked about there being another vehicle on the property that day that no one's ever talked about, that hasn't been identified. They don't know who was in it, or she says she doesn't know who was in it. Some of the tire tracks that were never looked
right
at. There's a lot of little weird, well, what was that? If it wasn't Alec, who was it? How is that going to be combated in trial to try and solidify that it was in fact Alec, and to remove any bit of the reasonable doubt over here of, well, there is a lot of mystery things going on at Moselle that day.
There were, and a good defense lawyer will bring that up and let it hang in the air.
Yeah.
And then focus hard in your closing argument on that is enough for reasonable doubt. Remember, you know, in a civil case, you've got to cross the 50-yard line. You cross the 50-yard line, you win. It's the preponderance of evidence standard. Beyond a reasonable doubt, though, prosecution's got to almost get in the end zone. And he raises a little bit of reasonable doubt that there was another car there. There were five different kinds of car tracks that were fresh, and we looked at Alex's Yukon or whatever, the GMC long body, and Maggie's Mercedes and Paul's truck, and these tire tracks are different. That's reasonable doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, just the way, look, no crime scene is perfect.
Yeah.
You know, Dr. Henry Lee, before he died, he finally admitted that, and he took liberties in some of his testimony. I don't know if you read about that. Before Dr. Henry Lee died, he said that, he once famously said that, you only get one chance at your credibility. And, you know, he took a lot of liberties that he finally admitted with evidence. And so here, the crime scene was trampled upon. They let family members on the crime scene go into the house and use the bathroom and use the sinks and the drains and all that. No crime scene is perfect, but this crime scene was riddled with a lot of people that were walking around freely that shouldn't have been walking around.
Is it just, I mean, is this a case where any way you spin it, no matter how much horrible information comes out about Alec Murdaugh and what kind of a monster he is and the likelihood that he did this and everything that points to it, is there just too much in here where there always will be reasonable doubt?
Well, you can create doubt anywhere you want in a case. The question is it reasonable? Do you have to really stretch to create the doubt, or is it... It's got to be reasonable doubt, not just any doubt. And a good lawyer can create doubt. It's the best lawyers that create reasonable doubt. Look, for me, I'm not as invested in getting that murder conviction, although I don't want him to walk free of the murder charge. I believe that he is guilty of it. Remember, I battled the friends of Dick Harpootlian, whether it was Dershowitz or Garagos or Sarah Azeri, every single night of the trial, I was one of the few people that were out on TV saying, I think that they're proving their case and it's really good circumstantial evidence case. But there are a lot of people that feel that Alex is, that they, I respect people that say that there's reasonable doubt. I start to lose a little bit of respect when I hear that Alex is innocent.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see the argument for reason without a doubt. I think it'd be, it's dishonest to say that there's not, but to say
that's why I think you're going to get a hung jury.
Yeah.
That's why I think you may get a hung jury.
Oh God. I wonder how many Alec Murdaugh trials we're going to get. It's a scary thought to think about. I want to talk about another case, but it's obviously we've talked about it in the past. Stephen Smith. We haven't had an update on this in quite some time. SLED reopened Stephen Smith's case specifically because of information found in the Murdaugh investigation. I don't know exactly what that was, and I'm in no way going down the road of Buster is connected to Stephen Smith. That's not where we're going. But I am curious. I mean, do we know the answer to that question? What was the nexus here that somehow brought the Murdaugh name to the Smith case?
It had to have been some kind of electronic discovery. It happened in July of 2021. The murders were obviously on June 7th of 2021, and something happened which caused SLED to reopen the investigation. The highway department had the file essentially from 2015 all the way through until they closed it. And during the murder investigation, something they discovered, and Chief Keel has never told me, but I believe it was some kind of electronic evidence that either was on somebody's phone or whether it was a photo or something that caused the investigation to open. And I had a really good dialogue with Chief Keel, basically from, I would say, right after the murder conviction in 2023, almost through to the beginning of 2024, where he was keeping me updated. Remember, we did a second autopsy. We took Stephen's body down to Florida and we got him an autopsy done that reached some new conclusions.
Yeah.
And we were optimistic that SLED was going to reallocate all those resources that they had on the Alex case to Stephen's case. And, you know, in this modern time, you know, you've got to be able to solve a killing. And we had heard rumors that there were five or six people that had knowledge, you know, not necessarily that they were guilty or they were involved, but they had real relevant knowledge as to what happened to Stephen on July 7th of 2015 when he was walking that road near Moselle. We heard that there was a grand jury impaneled, so we were very encouraged.
Yeah.
But now we are extremely discouraged.
What
we
happened?
Nothing. We've put a $50,000 reward out there. And we thought that the cone of silence, Tony, that existed in Hampton County when the Murdaughs were in power would be broken once Alex was convicted and the family would, you know, was held in disrepute and all the things that came out about the grandfather and everything like that. And, you know, we heard about that the grandfather actually put an obituary in the paper about his wife when she was going to leave him. You know, some, we just thought that people would say, you know what, the Murdaughs don't scare us anymore. We're willing to talk. Not that there was any connection
Yeah.
With Alex or Buster to the Myrtles. However, in the highway department file, the Myrtles were mentioned mm-hmm. in the investigative notes that the next day Randolph and Alex came to the scene where Tony was in the road and they were seen there and their names are there, but nothing. And we are hearing nothing. Sandy Smith is discouraged. We are discouraged. You know, it's just one of those things. And, you know, can you imagine this woman has lived 11 years now without any answers as to what happened to her son?
And the thing is, if there's more than one person involved in that, that would, you know, it certainly opens up the door and the likelihood that somebody's going to talk at some point. What, in your opinion, would be inspiring someone not to speak about any knowledge they have on this, unless they're the person who actually did it, who then obviously has a vested interest in not going to prison? But if someone just knows something about, I mean, do you think this one that was right, it was the action of one person and they're just like,
no,
I got away with this, I'm done?
No, I think there's a couple that were in a vehicle on that night.
Yeah.
Whether they were intentionally going to hurt Stephen because of his lifestyle, mm-hmm. That's one thing, or that he had knowledge. You know, he had told his mother that he was going the following week fishing in the Keys with a very, very important person, and his mother wanted to know who it was, and Stephen wouldn't tell him. So, you know, we know that there, you know, there could be a very important VIP involved. But it's, you know, or the person who did it is dangerous. And somebody who speaks is worried about, if I speak, I'm going to get killed. Look, there's five bodies around this family. There's Stephen Smith. There's Gloria Satterfield. There's Mallory Beach. There's Maggie. And there's Paul. That's a lot of dead bodies, Tony.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, do you hold any hope out here with the civil case that you know they're putting on against Becky, and digging into that world? Obviously, it's a different case, but this whole thing that was sprung out of the Murdaugh investigation. Do you think anywhere in any of these other places, maybe the same sort of luck will be drawn again, and there'll be some pieces of evidence that come out of some other investigation that help clear the path for whatever is in the road here, blocking answers to Stephen's case?
Could be in an investigative file that is, you know, tangentially related to the murder case. It could mm-hmm. be somebody decides in the civil case they'll sell or broker information. You just never know where it comes from. It could come from, you know, an unintended source. Look, the more eyes, the more ears, the more times like you and me and others say Stephen Smith, we keep that name out there, something may break. That's the hope. That is the hope that we have. I am discouraged, though. I will tell you.
It is. I mean, $50,000, is that where the reward is at right now, you said?
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money. It's not life-changing money. And No. We kind of were having this conversation about...
anonymously.
But I'm talking about like the Nancy Guthrie case. We're talking about that, where it's like 50 was the original, then it's 100, then it's a million. So if you're going to come forward with information, and you're not the one who did it, but you have information, you need enough to protect yourself. You need enough to make sure that it's going to be life-changing, and that, yes, you can come forward anonymously. I guess I'm wondering, is there anything else that can be presented to someone to inspire them to come forward other than money? Is there anything that can be presented of protection? You're going to be safe if you tell us. We're going to do this. That maybe someone who has some knowledge doesn't know how this system works or could work or may work to protect them. And maybe more of an open invite, in very, you know, easy to digest terms for someone out there in the ether who has knowledge that goes beyond money to inspire, because obviously 50,000 hasn't done it yet.
No.
No, you're entirely correct. We're not Savannah Guthrie. We don't have Savannah Guthrie's money.
Sure.
We don't have all the people. However, I have tried to talk to the heart of these men and women that may have knowledge of Stephen's death and say that you would want your, if it was your family member, you would want somebody to stand tall, to not let an injustice be pervasive like it is here. Mm-hmm. Come forward. The government will protect you unless that it's the person involved or persons involved are so powerful that you feel that not law enforcement won't protect you. You know, there's so much that is going on in this case. Remember, the Murdaughs controlled the criminal justice system in Hampton County for over 100 years. And at the same time, they owned the civil justice system.
Yeah.
And so people are scared. It's a small county. It's never grown. It's never grown because of the Murdaugh law firm. No businesses want to go there because they're going to get socked. You know, cases that I settle for $300,000 or $500,000 here in Richland County, they settle for $10 million or $20 million in Hampton County. The American Bar Association, Tony, in 2005, voted it the third worst judicial hellhole in the country behind Cook County, Illinois, Harris County, Texas. So that'll tell you what goes on in that county.
Do you think there could be any slowdown going on here with SLED on this? Because, I mean, the retrial of Alec, obviously, that fairly is new information that there's a retrial going on. But if people are reading the tea leaves and they're saying, well, this may come about, could that have slowed it down? I mean, is it just cold? Do they have nowhere to go?
Maybe they do and they don't want to. You know, certainly so many resources have been allocated in the Attorney General's office and SLED to Alex Murdaugh that he has, you know, stolen a lot of the oxygen from some very worthy and needy cases throughout our state. Look, we're not going to have this trial before the summer of 2027 or the fall of 2027. I do not believe that if Alan Wilson wins his primary tomorrow, you're definitely not going to have the trial before the governor's election if he's the Republican nominee. Mm-hmm. If he loses, I don't think he wants to retry it and go out a loser. I think he's going to leave it to the next attorney general, which is going to be interesting because I posited it out there publicly. I want to hear from them. I want to hear from each attorney general candidate. Are you going to retry Alex? Well, David Stumbo said he would. Stephen Goldfinch said he would. And David Pascoe has come out and said he would. But remember, David Pascoe is a best friend of Dick Harpootlian. The new attorney general, if David Pascoe wins this race, he went from a Democrat to running as a Republican. Dick Harpootlian has raised, I have heard, now this may not be true, I have heard he's raised 80 to 85% of the money for David Pascoe. So the question becomes, how does that work? What kind of resources, even if he's retried, is David Pascoe going to allocate in his office? Remember, Alan Wilson spared no expense in that first trial. So there's so many different variables. Are we going to have a motion for a change of venue? We now have a judge. That's important. But there's so many pretrial rulings. So think about what's going to happen over the next year or longer before this trial happens. It's going to be electric, Tony, electric.
It's a sequel I didn't think we were going to get, but we got it. So
we got it.
Buckle up, everybody. Eric Bland, defense attorney. Bland and Richter, as always, thank you so much for coming on and giving us your insight. Be sure to check out Eric's podcast, Anything But Bland, and Cup of Justice as well. Your thoughts in the comments section. We welcome them. The links are in the description. We'll continue our conversation right there. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
how to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Ryan Seacrest here. Every great barbecue has one secret ingredient. Patience. You do a little, and you wait a little. And while your dinner does its thing, you got a few minutes to yourself, right? Well, kick back with a little Chumba Casino. A flip and a spin. Who knows? Maybe even a login bonus. It is the perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here. And if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.